Howdy and welcome, venturers, to episode 9 of Campaign 2 of the Venture Maidens podcast. I know many of you listen to us on Spotify, and now good news! Spotify is introducing a rating and review system for podcasts on their platform. For all of you who listen on Spotify, it would be an amazing help for you to give us a rating and review to ensure that other people can find us easily and help with our metrics. And as always, an incredibly special thank you to our Patreon donors for getting us here. It's thanks to you that we were able to have a blast at PAX and meet so many of you in person, which was an absolute delight and just the best way for me to end this year. Of course, a special thank you to Emily Mayo for composing our theme song and Sirenscape for providing additional ambient music. Now, one of our sponsors this episode is Dwarven Rations. Made in Bermuda and shipped worldwide for 20 years, Dwarven Rations makes artisanal cakes with a dedication to quality. These cakes are fantasy-themed and made by a dedicated group of gamers, nerds, and artists. They have an abundance of flavor, from the traditional lemon and Madagascar vanilla, to chocolate, to swizzle, which is like a rum punch, coconut, and a rum and ginger, which is in the spirit of a dark and stormy. And each box includes a random tabletop RPG die for you as an extra special little treat. And for those of you who want a new merch product for your fan base, but not have to worry about buying and paying and shipping inventory, then they even have cake kits for you that you can customize with your logo and everything. These are great for starting up merch with little to no upfront cost. To find out more, head to their webpage, docglass.com/dwarven-rations. All right, let's get into this recap now. Last time on Venture Maidens, our heroes Aoife and Lou struck out on their own to pursue a bounty while Tony called in sick. After getting the scoop from a couple of ex-bounty hunters, the pair headed to a seedy hotel called Dreamland in the rundown Midnight Quarter. They quickly discovered that their target, a sandman named Ripper, was actually a disguised doppelganger. A brawl was had, but in the end, the pair emerged victorious with the Dust Dealer in tow. And that's what happened! Alright, friends, we'll catch you at the next stop.
Gather round, travelers, to hear our tale. Twinkle, twinkle, little star. Lead our Tony near and far. She will need help indeed to free a captive steed. Be careful who you trust as we head into Campaign 2, Episode 9, Horseplay.
We are now live. Hello, hello, everyone. Welcome. It's another episode of Venture Maidens, episode 9. Oh, gosh. I'm excited. This one got delayed a little bit, so here we are. Here we are ready to dive back in. For those of you who are new to the stream, hey, welcome. This is Venture Maidens. We are a D&D 5th edition actual play stream that converts to a podcast. Been running for about 6 years now, but very recently we just started Campaign 2. So this is the perfect time for new folks to join into our fae-infused world. Episode 9. How are we all feeling, guys? We're almost at episode 10, which means a tenth of what we did for Campaign 1. How's that? How's that landing?
that's makes it
feels,
it,
wow. Feels heavy.
Heavy. Oh, heavy.
I'm okay. Just excited okay. We're going to be level 3 soon and we get all those special campaign guide classes. I'm excited. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're going to get to start seeing some really, really cool stuff. For those of you, again, who don't know, we play in a homebrew world, a homebrew setting called The Plains, which almost a year ago successfully funded on Kickstarter, the making of the Venture Maidens campaign guide. And that is going to be coming out so soon. February now is the PDF delivery date. So very soon. So if you like what we're doing here, you're going to get to have it in a digital format and as a cool book. And tonight, in fact, we are exploring, beginning the journey with some of those unique character options that are introduced in the Venture Maidens campaign guide as we go on a little journey with Tony specifically. But we will have more on that to come. But let's do it. Let's do it, gang. Let's dive into this episode. So, hey, everybody. My name is Celeste Gonowich, and tonight I will be your Dungeon Master.
Hello, I'm Katie, and tonight, for a change, I will be playing Lorenzo the Edicap.
Oh, yes. Good. This is going to be good.
Well, I'm sure it'll be a pleasure to meet you. I'm Nassim, and I'm playing your half-orc fighter, Fittonia Silvertail.
And my name's Sage, and tonight I'm going to be Beasley the Badger.
I have nothing to say to that.
Good game, everyone.
Real test of friendship.
So you might have noticed, gang, that tonight we're doing something a little bit special. Since in episode 8, our heroes parted ways. Tony stayed home sick for the day. And basically, if you listen to episode 8, episode 9, this episode we are recording tonight, is simultaneously happening with the events of episode 8. So of course, while our other two heroes are off collecting a bounty, dealing with Dreamland, having some doppelganger fun, tonight we are exploring what happened with our dear, dear Tony. But before we get into that, I do also have to let you all know that this is a very adult stream. In general, you are going to see a lot of swearing, a lot of adult themes. Body horror is a pretty consistent one. Tonight in particular, animal exploitation is a content warning for tonight's episode. So if that is something that's triggering for you, this may not be the episode for you to watch. But with that, so Tony, we're looking at you. Basically, what just last happened with Tony, you had that conversation at, you know, you were at Tandy's, you talked at the Witch's Brew, and Tandy said, okay, yes, tomorrow morning, I'm going to have some people who will be in here, so meet me back tomorrow, and they will give you a lead for a bounty hunting job. You had conveyed to Rook the situation with the hag, you had all gone back to the chicken hut, and in the morning, as promised, Lou and Aoife had gone off to meet with Tandy and to pursue that bounty hunting job. Rook had also said, oh my god, I have to go deal with something, with a violent look in her eyes as she headed out to deal with after hearing about the hag situation. Mm-hmm. Leaving you now, Tony, alone in the chicken hut for the first time, with a cat suddenly is there. But before we jump into that morning and exactly what you do, the lies you tell, and where you're going, we start out with a dream. At first, I think it takes you a while to realize that it's a dream. It's one of those dreams that is so real that when you wake up, it's confusing, quite honestly. You are in the chicken hut, in the living room. Everybody has already gone to sleep. It's very dark. The only thing illuminating the common room of this place are the smoldering embers of a fire that has long burnt out. So just that orangey glow. And you can hear the occasional creak from upstairs. Maybe one of your companions moving around, shifting in bed. But you're alone, and it's quiet, and the shadows are long and dark on the floor. What do you do?
Takes a moment to really listen for Gordon, Rook, any noise, any even sound of people snoring, sleeping. Give a soft, anyone home?
Yeah, and you look around the room, and You don't see any pumpkins on the mantelpiece. You don't see any tiny little decorative pumpkins around, telltale signs that Gordon is here, Gordon was around. They're gone. And other than that occasional creak you hear in the house, and maybe it's just because it's an old house, or maybe because somebody's awake, there's nothing. It's a very eerie silence. And you hear that for a moment or two, and then a giggle breaks the silence, coming from behind your bedroom door.
I guess it's time to investigate. We'll slowly and carefully move to our bedroom door. I say we. It's like I'm going with her. I don't know why, but it's me, Tony. Tony's going to her bedroom door.
Tony and Nassim are both going to the bedroom door.
Yeah.
The door is closed. Do you open it? Yeah. And as you do, it creaks on ancient hinges, and it's that sound that splits the silence that you're sure will wake everyone else in the house up. But as you, you know, cringe and swing open, you see that there is a figure sitting on your bed with skin of dusty rose, eyes swirling with stars, just her hair trailing down her naked form, and she holds a finger to her lips in a shh gesture.
She kind of tilts her head down, eyes still looking forward at her, expecting her to do something or explain something.
Mm-hmm. And she looks at you, this weird sister, and she gives you a little come hither finger to move into the room, all the while keeping her other hand finger on her lips. Be very quiet.
Okay, I'll move forward into the room. I leave the door open.
Yeah. And she looks up at you, lovely as ever, and glances around the room and at your window, which you see is open to the night. And she gives you like a little wink. And she reaches somewhere on her body. You're not sure where, because she's not wearing any clothes. It's not like she's reaching into a pocket. But that hand that was on her lips now is a fist that she holds out before you. And as she unfurls her fingers, there is a tiny little light of just shining silver. It's like as if she had plucked a star from the sky. And that is what you are seeing before you, all in its tiny minuteness of what you would see from the earth. And it hovers above the palm of her hand.
Aw, babe, you got me a star.
And she makes the gesture once again. And she blows on it, and the star comes flying and kind of lands against your chest. And in this like little sparkles of silver light, it's gone. And you feel warm. And you wake up. And it's odd because you're in the same room you were just in, every detail the same. And what wakes you up is a sound of something closing, like a window being shoved back into a frame with a snap.
She's just gonna slowly peek her eyes open, not trying to act awake.
Yeah, no, it's your room. The window is closed. From your internal clock, you guess it's probably early morning or so. And actually, you do begin to hear the sounds of people moving around, probably Lou in the kitchen, as like pots and pans are clattering, and you hear, you know, Rook say something grumpy to to them, and conversation is starting up. The house is waking up around you.
So no one is in my room?
No. You look around. No little pumpkins. Closed window. Nothing. Just kind of a feeling of warmth where that star landed in your dream.
I do have a shield. Okay. I was like, she probably doesn't have a mirror in her room, but she'll probably go up to her shield and just like take a quick peek at her chest real fast, like feel it, touch it, see if like there's a residual feeling, like physical feeling of that warmth other than, you know, the feeling she's left with.
Yeah, you know.
Any signs of alteration to her body?
No, you look and nothing. And even as you are starting to wake up and face the day and the dream is fading in that way dreams do, the warmth is dissipating. So maybe it was just a dream. Or maybe it was a message. You did just dream about Celine. And in fact, that dream wasn't finished. Maybe this was the end.
Yeah, she's still not clear what it means, though. I think she wants to stay in bed and kind of like take a moment to think about what this stuff is, what's happening around her. And I don't know, just try and find some direction from it or whatever Celine was trying to tell her.
Sure. Do you want to make some kind of like check or what is Tony thinking right now?
Does he think like an
insight? Yeah, to maybe interpret what that all
I'm
meant?
I'm thinking an insight.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Oh, 19.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah. So you feel very clear about your dream. In that way, people who have like studied, you know, dream terminology for like a week are like, this is what my dreams mean. You feel very certain that dream you just had was the end of a conversation. That Celine was trying to tell you something, and with the window and her appearing, you get the sense she knew that the dream ended early and she was subverting it. You also still haven't seen any sign of Gordon in your room, which is a little bit weird. But whatever it was, Celine came back to try and tell you this message. And you feel very certain has something to do with that horse you saw before. And that little star, you're sure that was something to help you. Because that's what stars do, right? They guide, I think, would be what is occurring to Tony. It felt like a very helpful message, like a gift she was trying to give you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going to take it as I need to stay here today. She shut the window. That woke me up. I can hear everyone else getting their day started. I think the right move is to stay in and wait for the next kind of signal that will tell her what to do.
Sure. And then I think, is this the moment in time when Tony goes out and gives her a long speech about reasons she cannot go out today?
Yeah, I mean, we'll probably walk out really acting up that limp from our earlier battle.
Which still hurts. I mean, your HP has recovered, but like, ugh, it hurts. Your whole body hurts.
Yeah, my pride is hurt, you know? So swaddled in one of her big fur blankets, she hobbles out into the living room, just makes one of her old mom's batch of tea and is like, I'm gonna sit this one out, you guys. I can't fuck those little assholes. And my God, I found my sheets all red this morning. So it's not happening for me today. I'll see you all later.
Yeah. And after a few questions and a few more answers like that, Rook just backs away, doesn't want anything to do with that or talking about it anymore. And your companions do eventually finally leave, leaving you alone in the house. What do you do now? Here you are, alone in this extremely magical abode. What's the next move for Tony?
Next, I think since there's no pumpkins in my room, I'm gonna definitely lock my door, probably put something behind it, like a trunk of some kind, and then open up the window and sneak out.
Yeah, and you absolutely do. And the chicken hut has been left just after they leave. It's kind of perched like a hen would be in the middle of this forested area that you still recognize. You're still parked in the same place you were before. So you can absolutely sneak out, and you still definitely know the way into Coven. Yeah, what's your game plan right now? What is Tony thinking?
I think as far as the stars go, she'll probably head into town, try and get some. It's daytime now, yeah?
It's daytime. Yeah, there are no stars out.
Yeah. She'll probably just go into town and do, like, stakeouts all in the parts that she's familiar with so far, not veer off too much, just kind of eavesdropping on folks, seeing if she can once again catch conversations and whispers of the horse races and things like that. And if it turns out it's really not as talkative as it was yesterday, maybe she'll go back to that, what was it called? Witch's Brew?
Mm-hmm. Yep, the Witch's Brew.
Go back to the Witch's Brew and see if she finds people who know about it there.
Yeah, you head into Coven. And you have some kind of at least like idea of what's going on. You make it past, you know, the cat guarding the well that he recognizes you from yesterday. You make your way into those cute little Halloween themed streets, wander about for a bit. You do know that yesterday when Tandy was talking to you about where something like that might be, she had kind of vaguely pointed in a direction of town, saying, like, this part of town, this is where shady shit happens. And you now know that that part of town is called the Midnight Quarter. That's generally how they refer to it. And you know that by getting there, you can follow, you know, the lights that lead you to the purple and then to the black sections, as you are. So if you did want to hang out in the Midnight Quarter, you certainly could do that. Or do you want to hang out in safer parts of Coven during the day?
My instinct is to wait for the night to fall and see if stars will do anything for her. So I think I'd rather wait until it starts to get at least a little bit dimmer and the lights come out. Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll be easier for her to, like, sneak around, too.
For sure. Yeah. So you spend the day walking around. You get to see a lot of interesting stuff, I think, in Coven. Just more of that same, just this fascinating patchwork of different peoples and cultures and shops and businesses, things that you had no idea people would pay money for or, like, sell on the... It's a very fascinating place. And I think eventually, yes, you do get tired and you wind up back at the Witch's Brew. And when you do get there, it's probably early afternoon at this point. You've been wandering around for a few hours now, trying to pick something up, hear something. A lot of people aren't really talking about the Midnight Quarter or what's going on there. But as you roll in, maybe, 2, 3 p.m., you see that the Witch's Brew Tavern is packed. There are a lot of different interesting folk crammed in the tables. You do see, you know, the pixie waitstaff flying about this establishment. Tandy is currently behind the bar with a few other individuals talking to patrons. So you walk in and, there's a lot going on.
Mm. She'll give a little nod to Tandy and just make sure that her friends aren't around first.
Yeah, you look around at, nope, you don't see Lou or Aoife there. And yeah, Tandy she'll look at you confused for like 30 seconds. And then she recognizes you and waves.
Right on. I'm just not feeling so, you know, hot today. I thought I'd come in for a little hot toddy or something to warm me up while I waited for my friends to get back.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, they went out on, like, a bounty hunting job, so they're, like, gone. They've been gone for, actually, a few hours now. I hope they're okay.
Any idea where the job led them?
Oh, to be honest with you, I, like, wasn't there. I was, you know, doing my thing.
Doing your Tandy thing, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, it's so weird. The satyr who lives next door, right, has been totally trying to hook up with, like, my barback, and it was a whole thing, so I kind of had to, you know, like, talk to everybody, and it's cool, it's all good, but Bert and Ernie were in earlier, and they helped your friends, and...
Oh, all right. Well, good job wing-womaning, and yeah. That's cool. It's good to see you as always. Now, maybe I'll be on my way soon after this drink. Thank you very much.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, do you just want the drink or?
I was interested in checking out some of those parts of town. I don't know if you have any recommendations of, you know, things to avoid or The Midnight Quarter, I think, is what you said it was called. And
yeah, okay, so you're like still on that. Yeah, it's like a super dangerous part of town. So if you go there, just, I guess, watch your back. I guess the, you know, the witches who run Coven, they kind of, they don't really have as firm a grip on that area as like the other areas of Coven. So you might run into more like court fae or, you know, I think just be careful and then maybe like look really mean when you're walking around. That'll probably help.
All right. I can do that.
Yeah. Right. Good luck, I guess. Don't die.
Oh, no. You don't have to worry about that.
Yeah. Well, it's also like getting dark. So are you sure you want
to? Maybe I'll just go back to the hut and wait for my friends. You're right. Probably a little too much to take on alone.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, like, be well.
And same to you, Tandy.
Yeah, she sort of drifts off and
keep
is
your
gone.
Head on your shoulders.
Yeah. Never comes back to give you a check or take any kind of money.
I'll leave a couple coins down and I'll walk out.
Yeah. So you do, and you know, it's getting later into the evening now. Dusk is starting to descend. You start to see a couple of twinkling stars in the sky, and you begin to feel something very warm in one of your pockets.
Ooh, I want to find the pocket.
Yeah, it's like, you know, one of your trouser pockets or whatever. You reach in and, yeah, there's something very hot and small. Like a something that's been heated up for a long time, maybe about the size of a marble.
And I take it out, try to do it discreet. I don't want to, like, if it is happens to be the star I think it is, I don't want to just be like, oh,
it's my star. Yeah, you take it out and immediately, yeah, you can see silver shining light through your fingers as you take it out. And so you can kind of shield it with your hands. But you see that it's glowing pretty bright. It's not like wildly going to, you know, blind everyone around you bright, but it is glow stick at full intensity bright.
Mm-hmm.
In your hand, this little silver star, and you can feel it tugging, like it's trying to move out of your grasp.
Quickly puts it back into her pocket, but keeps it in her hand tightly, and then just kind of lets whatever way it feels like it's dragging, like she's walking, leading with her hip.
Yeah, like
the pocket.
Yeah. Yeah, and you can feel it. Yeah, it's like a little bug that's like batting against your hand in certain directions, trying to run and pull you in.
I mean, I bet that looks pretty scary if you're someone walking like this.
Like this, and your hand is kind of shaking a little bit as this thing is like forcefully trying to.
She's playing it up and doing like, hey.
Yeah, and you do. Yeah, you start to lead down the street, and with this strange gesture and action, people don't seem interested in speaking to you or stopping you as you move through the streets. Most people kind of avoid you, and you start to wind down the streets. The star seems to be very specific about where it is going, as you will come to like a four-way intersection and the star will slam against your hand in a certain like compass direction. It is clearly leading you somewhere. And as you continue to follow it.
Yes, I do.
So you continue to walk through these streets, and as you are doing so, you are clearly being led into a worse part of town. You see those like dark purple lights starting to illuminate your way. The businesses start getting scarce. Street traffic is getting scarce as you are heading into a dirtier, more abandoned part of town. And you find yourself in a place now where it looks like most of the shop windows have been boarded up. There's a lot of trash on the streets. It's the very rare individual you just pass by. And full night has begun to set in. And the star is even more adamant now. At the point, too, where you can see some of that shining. starting to emerge from your pocket, despite your best efforts. As it gets darker, the star seems to get brighter. And you follow it to a point where you come to basically like a T intersection. And the streets have been pretty dark and lonely at this point. There are no streetlights anymore. You see some of the broken orbs that might have been streetlights that functioned at one point, but they're all gone now. And for the first time in a while, you hear voices. A lot of voices. People like chattering, talking to each other, casually milling about. A lot of people, actually. Just around the corner.
We go around the corner. Check it out.
Yeah. So you turn this corner and you see there a very large building. Almost like a, like if you were to imagine like on an airfield, like something of that size, like this big warehouse. There's no signs or anything. And again, you can see windows boarded up. There doesn't seem to be any entrances except for this one right in the center here. And there are a bunch of people lined up by the doors. So you see maybe like 50 different individuals or so milling about. And all of these people are various fae, various mortal creatures. And they all seem to be waiting in line for something.
We're gonna wait in line. Like, we know exactly where we are. I, me, Tony. Jesus. Me and my star.
Just me and my star. At this point, Beasley and Lorenzo, what are you two doing as you stand here in this line? Actually, let's start with some descriptions. One of the couples that we see in this line, Sage, why don't you give us a description of Beasley for the group?
Oh boy, so this is just that classic European badger, but large, like the size of a black bear. It's like as a humanoid. Huge. Walking, and she is wearing in that very classic gray pelt with the black and white stripes on the face, and she's got these, you know, long claw thingies, and on top of her head, posed at a very jaunty angle, is a little straw hat with the blue ribbon and a little daisy tucked into the ribbon. And she is wearing a yellow jumper with like this big floral design. And she's got this like big bag that's like hooked around her closet, and on her arm, she's got her arm hooked around her beloved Lorenzo.
Oh yes, beloved Lorenzo. Katie, please describe the beloved.
My husband.
Lorenzo. My darling. Yes. My everything.
So Lorenzo is pretty much your standard Ettercap from the photo in 5e. He's got that dusty blue skin, the long gangly arms with the claws at the end, the pincer face, the inky eight eyes, and that big bulbous belly. Except for he, like his lovely wife, has a hat just perched on a little fedora, and he is standing there in one of his clawed hands with the most disgustingly filthy pair of ruffly bloomers with an unidentifiable sparkly blue stain on them. And he just, out of the corner of his eye, sees this weirdly walking woman approach, and he just kind of like elbows his wife and he's like, "Hey, look over there, babe."
Oh, who are we looking at?
Yeah, you see a half-orc come around the corner here in like full adventuring armor, looking a little bit confused, and there's something really, really shiny glowing out of her pocket. And she seems to kind of look down, up and down the line, and then, I don't know, how suave are you being? Tony, why don't you go ahead and give me, like, a, I don't know, what do you feel like, a performance? Yeah, to feel like you belong here.
I know exactly where I am.
Matching the, how well you match the vibe.
How do you match the vibe?
I know, no jaunty hat, I don't think she belongs.
Yeah.
There's a lot of jaunty hats here.
It's looking like I walked in on your brunch. it's 17.
Okay. So you see the half-orc, like, looks around, kind of confused for a moment, and then very coolly saunters to the end of the line. You do note she, unlike you and everyone else in this line, does not appear to be holding a letter of entry.
Lorenzo kind of like, there's like an obvious line, but Lorenzo kind of tilts himself out of it so he becomes visible. And he just kind of over to her is like, psst, hey, lady, come here.
So Tony, this giant bluish purple bug thing, leans out and says that to you.
Trying to be, you know, cool and casual. You talking to me?
Yeah, I'm talking to you. Who else would I be talking to? Get over here.
Yeah? What you want?
Well, I can't help but notice that you're out here trying to get stabbed with a shiny thing in your pocket.
It's really shiny. You think it's actually getting shinier the longer she stands here.
Delicately pulling her shoulder cape over her pocket. I'm not looking for any trouble. I'm just, you know, I'm here to, you know, we're all here for the same reason.
Uh-huh, what is that?
Well, I think you looking as good as you are, we're all here to catch a show, am I right?
Oh, she's telling porkies. Mm-mm.
Listen, I don't want to embarrass you, but my wife here, very perceptive, okay? Something ain't right here. Where's your invitation?
I'm sorry, do you work here? Are you checking tickets or something?
No, I'm old and nosy. Where's your invitation?
Well, you know, maybe it's in my back pocket. I haven't quite checked yet, so thank you for your interest. I'm gonna just be in line here.
It's the shiny thing, your invitation, because that's a much nicer one than we got. Ours is always so fucking terrible.
It is quite smelly.
Can you smell this?
Holding, indicating to the nasty bloomers that they, I think, are holding. And I think, Tony, at this point, you would see that the other people in line, whether singles or groups, all appear to be holding some really weird, nasty piece of trash of some kind.
Mm.
So whether it's like, you know, a half-melted doll or like a bunch of dead, slightly rotting flowers like pulled out of a vase. There's just a lot of different items that people are holding gingerly along the line.
Oh yeah, this I thought about, this is just my backup invitation. My invitation, my friend's coming real soon. They're going to bring it. This is for them. They have my invitation.
Oh, that's good, because if you don't have an invitation, they're going to kill you.
Thank you so much for reminding me. You're right. All right, let me make sure my friend's on their way.
Let me call them on my cell phone.
Lorenzo just looks over at Beasley with all eight of his eyes. He's like, I love how much of a straight shooter you are, babe. Listen, I don't want to impose or anything, but you seem like a good kid. You want to come in with us?
I would love to. Sure. Well, maybe my friend just got lost on the way.
Yeah, your friend, I'm sure. And he kind of like takes one of his long gangly arms and like makes space between like him and the people behind him. He's like,
yeah, there's a little, but they, you know, back out of your way, seeing your great height and overwhelmingly intimidating appearance.
Make way for my niece here. Just move a little bit back.
Oh, yeah, this is a blood relative. Yeah.
What's your name, dear?
Franny.
Cute. I like it. Well, yeah, Franny, well, it's good to see you. It's been too long. How's your mom?
Mom's doing all right. You know, she never loves to leave the house, so I'm stuck with the groceries and the chores and all that. Same as always, you know, Uncle.
Oh, well, you're really selling
this. What's your name?
Yeah.
Lorenzo.
Yeah, you see the two, the people behind you are like a goblin couple, so they're, you know, they're also dressed in, the goblin has like a very nice little bowler hat and kind of a brown suede jacket, and the goblin next to him, who looks nearly identical to him, is in a oversized floral dress with sort of a yellowed lace hat veil affair, And they're just looking up at you, rolling their eyes as they're listening to this conversation.
Sorry, are you cutting in line?
The little goblin wife says up to you.
No, she's not cutting in line. She's here as our guest from our invitation that we're granted for.
Really? That is your niece?
I don't come into your house asking questions about who you're related to. No, snug her off.
Fine. Well.
And turns around and looks at like the people behind them and is like, well. And just chatters for a bit before not saying anything else. But looking at you, upset, for, you know, 15 minutes or so. Very passive-aggressive line person behind you.
Oh, lovely.
Oh, there's some real ballsy insects around here.
Yeah, you get used to it. I'm technically related to arachnids, though, so don't group me in with them.
Oh, yeah, wouldn't dream of it.
So, now that we're family, what you really doing here? Wearing armor. The big sword. Look at that sword.
Yeah, nobody else in line seems to be wearing any kind of like adventuring armor or weapons. They all seem like, not for like a fine dining night, but like a night of doing some kind of event, going out for the evening.
Well, a friend of mine told me this wasn't the best part of town, so I figured I'd come prepared.
Right. Well,
I'll be honest, I really don't know what I'm doing here. What's the big hoopla tonight?
We're going to the motherfucking races, kid. There's some shit going down underneath. You ever heard of the Slytherin Court?
Yeah, she probably has, right? Maybe?
Nope. I don't think Rook has taken any kind of time to actually explain what the fuck is happening.
Oh, no, I mean it like being in the army, but...
No, because the Eldrin Empire has no idea that there are a bunch of different courts. It's just all the fairies, and they're all bad, is their very incorrect assumption of everything that is happening in the wild. Mm. You have heard Rook say before that there are different courts and they all have problems, and also you knew that you signed a contract not to do violence on behalf of one of the courts.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you've never heard the term Slytherin Court before.
Okay. I'm not super familiar, but I love to learn.
Well, babe, why don't you tell her what you want to tell her? This is your thing. This is your outing. It's your day.
This is your day. You pick this day. I pick the next
one. This is our activity. Well, you see, these races, they're put on by the Slytherin Court. You know, they race horses, and so the Slytherin Court is no good. It's oh god, what? They're the worst. They just get their seedy little paws into everything, and it's positively awful. And I think they kidnapped some of my friends.
Oh. They're so awful. I was going to ask, what are you doing here? Why are you going to this show? Why are so many people here?
People are shitty.
That's some truth. You have to go to the Feywilds to learn. And I will say, too, Beasley, you would know that not only do they take horses, they're basically, the Slytherin Court is interested in anything that could be an interesting thing to race upon.
Oh, God.
From horses to magical creatures to, and Fae, it's a whole thing. Whatever people will bet on is what they will put in these races.
So I take
it. They strap a saddle on you.
I might pay to see that one.
I'd put on quite a show. I'm not going to lie. But so I take it you guys aren't really here to enjoy the show.
Nah, this is my battle fedora. We're going to bust these suckers out.
Well, I have to say, it might be the nicest battle fedora I've ever seen.
Taste. I knew I liked you.
You got style.
And as you all are having this conversation, you hear the scraping sound of metal as those main doors that have been closed thus far at the top of the line are dragged open. And you see a very tall figure come out, but you're not exactly sure what they look like. They are swathed in this deep cloak, this deep hooded cloak that hides most of their features. You catch a flash of like orangish eyes as this figure moves and drags out a stool and sits on it by the front door, and very much like you might see at like an exclusive nightclub or something, sits there and starts talking to the people in line. And the line finally starts to move as group after group presents an item, this whatever, this piece of trash they have, and then moves, starts moving into the line. So the line is moving.
Well, all right, well, just a heads up, I think I'd be able to help you guys out if you want to help me out with a little task of my own here, since you're kind enough to let me in with you. My sword is yours if you need it.
Oh, yeah, because you got them little humanoid fingies. Good call, bringing the sword, actually. Well,
you're like claws.
Beasley makes a rawr gesture at you with her little bed claws.
Oh, it's a little cute hat. It's the cutest thing you've ever seen in your whole life.
Well, kid, then it seems like we're in it. We're family for life now. And he gives you a big stinky hug.
Oh. Oh, yes, Uncle Lorenzo. It's like a little happiness, a little bit of regret.
I'm so glad your mom adopted you, he says very loud.
Oh, Unky. Hell yeah. Yes, so as you continue, more and more people are let into this area. It finally comes up to your turn, and you see that the individual sitting on this chair, they have gray skin, like the color of ash, and very angular features. Almost goblin-like, but a little bit different as they stare at you with these orange eyes and this sallow, hollow expression. And they say, ticket.
Lorenzo will take the giant bloomers and like fan them out in front of him, almost like wafting that scent over to the guy.
Yeah. And with no flinching or anything, this creature looks at the bloomers and looks up at you and makes a nod gesture that you can go in.
After you, my goddess. Gestures for Beasley to enter.
Yeah, and we'll stride forward, looking very confident.
Yeah, and the you hear a wait from the person sitting on the stool, and Tony, a gray hand with long, dark, dirty nails, like, lands on the chest as the figure looks out, and the orange eyes stare into yours. He looks back at the other two. This one's with you?
Yeah, that's my niece.
She's your guest tonight.
She ain't never been to the races. Look at her. She's a mess.
Tonight I become a woman.
You say to...
That's right. First night at the races. Family tradition.
And you say that, and the eyes, the unflinching eyes, look at you. Huh. And then the hand is removed from your chest. And you're allowed to pass.
All right.
So, immediately, as you step through the doors and, you know, the curtains that have been hung over so nobody can see accidentally inside, as you pass through, sound hits you. So maybe whatever these curtains were doing, it was also magical protection against what is happening here. You enter a very large lobby type room. You can see immediately opposite you are a set of tall floor-to-ceiling double doors that are currently closed, but people are milling about this space. There are lots of different lounge chairs, places for people to hang out, and on the longest wall in this room, you see a bunch of windows. that have been set up. And there are bars over all of these windows and like a thin line where people can walk up to the windows and you see coins are being exchanged. Coins, objects, whatever, with whoever these people are behind this counter here. You can see that there are posters that have been posted all over the walls with lots of different very flashy names and pictures of different creatures and different... basically, this looks identical if you have ever been at a horse racing track. This is kind of the lobby room where people would hang out, place bets, and there is a general air of excitement. You can also see that in one corner there is a bar where currently an individual is slinging out drinks. So it's a big, fun party atmosphere at this point.
Well, can I do like a perception to see if like service entrances, things like that, where employees are coming in and out of?
Yeah, I think just without even a check, you could see that the big set of double doors are clearly like what's going to be maybe the track, you would presume, on the other side of those doors. Once those are open, the event has begun. You can see that there is a room behind where all the tellers are, though the tellers, probably bookies, are behind those paned like windows. So you can't see the entrance to wherever that is. You can see that behind the bar in the corner, there is definitely a door that wait staff is moving in and out of, the people who are bringing drinks and whatever, snacks out for purchase. That seems to probably be the easiest point of entrance to whatever back area is happening here. Though it is behind a bar of people. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Lean forward and nudging Lorenzo and Beasley. I'm thinking we're trying to go into the back of the house, right? Looks like it's one way over there.
Not a bad idea, kid. What do you think, Bees?
Oh, I think that's to be sneeze.
My wife, ladies and gentlemen, and he just like elbows a stranger.
It's that goblin, the goblin wife from before behind you, who's like, oh.
Unhappy marriage, I can tell.
She rolls her eyes and she drags her little goblin husband in the brown surcoat like over to the bar and waits while he orders something for her.
Maybe we order something real stupid that they gotta go to the back for. And then we go back there and I'll web them. Unless you ladies have a better idea. I'm quick to web a fella, so just let me know when you need me, you know?
We could.
Oh, just like you.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, I want to hear that.
Oh, just like you webbed my little jam tart.
Yeah, I knew it was going to be good.
Babe.
Oh, God. You guys are something special.
For noticing.
What if we could find some kind of extra uniforms and just blend our way into the back? Because seems like there are a lot of people right up at that bar. It'd be hard to just kind of go in without someone being like, hey, those guys.
Maybe
unless we cause a scene.
Webs will do that.
I'm very good at that.
Oh, your voice? Because when you sing, you're like a nightingale. You know, maybe when that omnipotent spirit of a DM comes back, I can see if I know anybody from my old days.
Well, tell me about those old days.
Oh, well, it was not the best of days. You know, I was a single old lad and I didn't have love in my life. I was working for the Slithers, you know? Mm. And then one day I laid 8 eyes on this beautiful badger, and I knew this racing biz, this Slytherin court, it was nothing. When you saw that fuzzy little face, you know, you just reevaluate your life.
Mm-hmm.
But before then, yeah, I killed a lot of people. It wasn't good. I regret it.
She nuzzles her with her little snoot. It's got little glasses at the end of.
DM, does Lorenzo, I know that he had a friend who got him his ticket in. Where does he work in this operation? Would I know if he's here today?
Yeah. So your contact into this, your way into the event, was one of the courtesy managers for the jockeys who work at this event. So you would know that this event is largely run by creatures called Darklings, which are sort of a darker, more emo version of goblins, is their general deal. So the majority of the jockeys who actually ride and run in these races are Darklings. And so like a courtesy manager is basically the person who does whatever it takes to make these famous people happy, whether it's bringing in, you know, highly specific types of bottled water or, you know, making sure they have a fun night on the town whenever they come to visit. One of these Darklings is going to be your contact. So why don't you give me a name for them?
That's okay. I'm terrible at naming things. I don't know. Vinny.
Vinny. Oh, okay. Well, that's a choice.
It always is. You gave me the option.
I did that. I'm sorry. All right. So Vinny is your Darkling contact who works here. And you would know that below, like, the arena and the lobby area is going to be, like, the offices and, you know, it would be that restroom that the jockeys might hang out in before and after events. And certainly, wherever they're keeping the creatures is going to be below decks here. So you probably could get access through the kitchens. That might be a little bit hard, but possible. Probably more direct access would actually be to go into the arena itself and then find like the doors and the entrance ways that lead down below the stadium.
Well, we could just wait to go in, and then potentially we got some access points, a little there, a little here, you know, once we get in. But here, I mean, look at all these people. While I do think that Beasley could enchant them for us, it's probably not our best bet long term. We should probably just wait. And maybe I'll find my guy.
Wait, like, let the show start?
I guess. I mean, that's my best plan for biggest success, you know? I'd rather not die. I've got a long life to live with this one.
I mean, I guess we could wait if you think that's best.
Once people are busy running around doing things for all the jockeys, then we'll have a easy opportunity to sneak into the back.
I guess that's what we'll do.
All right, well, white wine spritzes on me.
Oh, sweet angel. Yes, so you order a round of white wine spritzers for the group,
yeah.
Lorenzo?
Yeah, sure do, because I don't have to keep track of this wallet at any point.
No. You're loaded. Your associates
Come
that
on.
You're here with, the Forest Court is very interested in this night going well. So they provided you with everything from a wardrobe budget, which you too clearly have taken advantage of, to, you know, some pocket money to make it look like you belong. You can even play some bets, you know, if it, like, to make it look like, again, you belong. So you can see that there are the rosters, you know, of different creatures that are participating in the race, other known jockeys. I don't think you, Lorenzo, have been to one of these in a long time. And Beasley, this is your first time to one of these. So I don't think these names would mean anything to you. But other people seem very excited about them.
Yeah, maybe we look at who's racing, do what, I don't know, maybe we can ask around, see if we know any sure bets, and potentially hear about what's going to be racing. Maybe it's your friends, babe.
Oh, it could be. I wonder what if they've got some kind of clever name that maybe I could figure out. And she immediately goes to look at all the names of all the animals.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the names on the posters are not terribly telling. They're all things like Starbucks, like Speed Demon, you know, like shit like that, that you're like, wow, this is terrible. But there is a very helpful, there's like comic book illustrations of these beings that are being raced. So it looks like here tonight, engaged in the race, you've got a griffin, a drake, so one of those wingless dragons, an axebeak, a direwolf, and a yeth hound seem to be what you recognize from the list here. None of those would ring, I think, particularly familiar to you from the forest court. But you do know, I mean, they have a whole stabling facility down here, so who knows?
As she kind of shakes her head and goes, not tonight, it looks like, which is good. They won't be trying to move them around to different places.
Good, good. See anything interesting? What was your name, Franny?
Yeah. She'll take a look at the list, and if it's the same stuff, she'll be like, I mean, this is all just as awful as I imagined it would be, but there is something else I'm looking for. But you know what? The more damage we can do, honestly, the better.
Sounds good to me. Well, let's get a good spot by the doors so we can get in. I ain't placing no bets. That don't seem right.
Oh, you're gonna actually spend money?
I said I'm not. It ain't right.
Okay, okay.
Other than the white wine spritzers, which
that's
is
different.
Okay.
Wait, so this friend of yours, you mentioned you knew them from back in your old days with this court?
Yeah.
Are they also kind of double-crossing the court, or?
I don't know. You give him money. He does what you want. That's how a lot of people work.
Tony's just trying to figure out how they're able to do this stuff. I don't think she knows that they're working on behalf of another court. And the risks.
Oh, yeah, you would have no idea what the Forest Court is either. This is all very. And you still really don't know what the Slytherin Court is, other than Beasley thinks they're really shady, is your only context.
Yeah, but I mean, like, they didn't mention the Flower Court either, right?
The
like,
Forest
I don't,
Court, yeah.
Forest nope. Court. I don't even know. I just think they're here to help their friends.
Right. And but they have a friend in the Slytherin Court. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. This is all really. But they've been really nice to you. That's all I can tell you. Really know.
Yeah. I mean, she knows she's stepping into some dangerous waters here. Mm-hmm. Might have to say goodbye to her eye colors.
Danger zone.
Yeah, you did sign an agreement.
You'd look great with gray eyes.
Or yeah. She could just wear yellow glasses for the rest of the show.
Ooh, there you go. Cool. Done. So you all are milling about, kind of awkwardly sipping your spritzers, I think, by the door, when finally a big bell rings out. You don't actually see a bell, but the sound of something, almost like it was beamed over an intercom or with magic, rings through the area. Like that sound before, you know, intermission is about to end. And everybody seems to get very, very excited as they cluster forward towards the doors, which open up. And you can see just beyond it what must be the largest part of this grandiose warehouse that you have been in. And as the doors open up, you find yourself standing at the top of several rows of tiered bleacher-like seats that look down on the main flat area of this building, which has been painted with lines to look like a racing track, automatically recognizable as something, you know, similar to horse racing. And people are pushing past you excitedly, moving into their seats, clustering, looking at their, you know, their little bet cards that they have placed. And you can see that hanging along the ceiling here are the banners of these different jockeys and their creatures. Everybody seems to have a general favorite, a lot of opinions about what's going to happen tonight. You see people moving about more of these Darklings, and you now recognize that doorman was probably something called the Darkling Elder Lorenzo, I think you would know, which is sort of like the boss of these creatures. Like, some of them grow to be very large and intimidating and have special magic powers, and that must have been what you were dealing with at the front door there. But they are moving about the field, you know, sweeping things up, like just preparing, making final preparations. And music is playing from somewhere, kind of enhancing the atmosphere. It's all very fun and festive. Welcome, dear travelers, to another Venture Maiden's Midroll. While you are taking a little breather from all that hot and heavy action, I'll update you on the latest and greatest from Venture Maidens. As of today, January 3rd, 2022, we are back in action from our holiday break, so you can catch us back on our typical recording schedule every Wednesday night. We will be alternating between streaming the last few episodes of our Rime of the Frostmaiden playthrough and Campaign 2 episodes each Wednesday at 6:30 p.m. Pacific Time on our Twitch channel. So, if you want to enjoy the action live, you can find us there by heading to twitch.tv/theventuremaidens. And, of course, if you can't catch the live stream, we upload every single video recording to our YouTube channel. So whether you're new to the show, curious to see some bonus content, or just want to see what the heck we look like, you can find all the good stuff by typing Venture Maidens into YouTube. And of course, as we launch into a brand new year of podcasting, we come to you hat in hand to help us spread the word of Venture Maidens. Now, more than ever, we want to get the word out about our show and the wonderful community of folks like you who have made this journey so fantastic. So, keep recommending us to friends. Let us know your thoughts by tagging us on social media, and of course, make sure to leave those ratings and reviews in your podcatcher of choice. Your reviews and stars encourage new people to give us a listen, which makes a world of difference for growing our party. In other news, keep your eyes out for some Venture Maidens goodies coming soon. We're in the process of putting together our fourth biannual fanzine, so the cutoff date to sign up as a Patreon recipient is coming up fast. Folks who donate to our Patreon at the $10 a month level or higher, or make a one-time annual donation of $90 or higher, receive a physical copy of this luxurious softcover zine in the mail, and folks at the $5 tier receive an electronic copy. So, to find out more about the zine and all the other kick-ass rewards you receive for supporting the show, head on over to patreon.com/venturemaidens to get the scoop. All right! I think that's the business, so I'll let you get back into the episode. Catch you next time, venturers.
I guess we can be looking around for any kind of one of these entrances that would let us into the back area, or even if we see Vinny or something like that. To get in.
Yeah. So you're scanning. You don't see Vinny in particular. It is kind of hard. All these darklings wear that same like hooded outfit. So you are having a hard time picking out if Vinny is or is not there. But you do see that at the very bottom, like on the ground level, at the bottom of the bleachers, there are two doors that basically darklings are coming in and out of, the people who are going out on the field, the people who are selling concessions. So it looks like one of those two entrances is probably leading down in a way into the back.
Oh, great. You see that? We gotta get in there, okay? So what's the plan, ladies? Put your big fat brains to the test. We distracting? We saying I'm looking for the little Etacap's room? We intimidate him.
Where's the little arachnid's room? Excuse me?
Oh, God.
I don't really feel comfortable with your primate toilet. Can you please direct me where I need to go? Thank you.
Oh, goodness. How do you think, Nassim?
I think we should just wait until it seems like someone has just walked in and, like, follow behind them. As, you know, like...
A classic. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
classic. Like, we're trying to get your attention, or like, mm-hmm. oh no, we're with this, we're also helping with this task.
Yeah, it's like, mm-hmm. oh, you're showing us our way to something.
Mm-hmm. Got you. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like we're being escorted.
Yeah, and I mean, there are a lot of people milling about at this point. There's a lot of excitement as the race is beginning. A lot of the staff is very busy at this moment. So I would say if you all could give me a group check, I'm going to give you all advantage on this, though, because this is like prime time to sneak into the back area. So what kind of check do we want to do? We think this is a performance. Do we think this is a stealth? If you're trying to look like you belong, we could also argue deception.
I think Lorenzo's play is just going to be to kind of slink in the shadows and blend in with his, like, dusty purpleness and just mm-hmm. Kind of like slink in as he can. Yeah, he'll do a stealth.
We have a vote for... Well, it's a group check, so we have a vote for stealth, because I think you all are walking in there unit, okay. So you gotta...
I'm mm-hmm. good with stealth, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you're just, you know... Nobody needs to know. Everybody's so busy.
I got a 19 and a 20.
Holy plus shit. Five. Okay. Ooh, nice. Okay. Fuck. All right. Lorenzo disappears.
What'd you get?
11.
I got 13.
25.
Wow. Okay. So Lorenzo disappears. No idea where that happens. And then Beasley and Tony, you are moving by. Not doing great, but I think Beasley, just as... You follow one of these darklings into the back room here. You have no idea where your husband is. And as you pass by, your general girth sort of covers Tony as you are moving through. And a darkling comes whipping around the corner that you didn't expect and bumps into you and looks up and says, "Hey, what are you doing back here?" Looks at you.
Oh, I'm so sorry. You see, and she's going to dip her claws into her purse and scoop out a couple gold pieces. I was just hoping we was going to be able to run into my favorite jockey, Albatross. And, you know, I just wanted to give him a good luck charm. And she's going to push a couple gold pieces towards this darkling.
Yeah, and the darkling looks up at you and mouth agape for a moment and goes, "Ugh, another one, okay. Yeah, Albatross.
Oh, he's very popular."
I know. He's my cousin, but I'm the better looking one, but nobody pays attention to that. And says, "You just go down to the left, and then second door on your right will be the jockey's lounge, but don't tell them I sent you. They'll get real mad."
"I wouldn't trade with it. Bless your heart, child. Let's go."
"All right, Mom." And he takes your money, pockets it, kind of waves you off and like rushes past you. And Tony, you're just in, I think, gray and, you know, silver fur against the wall. Just was not seen whatsoever. Mm.
She's very soft.
Aww, so soft. It's like laying on I don't even know. I've never felt a fur
squished
coat
against a pillow.
Yeah, I'm a vegetarian. I don't know. But like, you know,
you hear from the ceiling where Lorenzo is just hanging from the ceiling. Yeah. He's like, "That was inspired, babe. He didn't even know."
No idea.
Just like skitters out of the ceiling.
What a terrifying... What a weird couple. I love it. No,
don't worry,
couple.
He glued his hat on, so it will stay.
Oh.
It's stuck, naturally. It's stuck on by his web.
Yep.
Yeah. It's, yep. So now not only have you succeeded, but you have exact directions if you do want to go to the Junkies Lounge at this point.
That's good to me.
That's perfect. Let's hurry on over.
Yeah. So you make your way down the hall, and I think you are generally avoiding or keeping to the shadows or just making yourselves look like you belong there as you're moving through the halls, and darklings pass by you and either, you know, they glance and don't seem to think you're interesting enough to stop, or you run into very few people as you make your way down this hall. You follow down a set of stairs, so you are at a lower tier now, probably below where the racing track is, and you open up into this like long concrete hallway, and you can see, you know, a couple doors on the right, a large set of double doors at the very end of the hall, and very eerie glowing white lights. They'd be like fluorescent lights, except they're magic, tethered to the ceiling here, and you can hear from behind these doors on the right, where the jockeys were indicated to be, a lot of different chattering sounds. But you do see those double doors on the end, and it looks like just beyond them, there's another set of stairs that would lead you lower.
So I think if we're trying to get to the animals, we should probably keep going down.
Mm-hmm. Can I go over to the double doors and try and push them open for them?
Yeah, you do. They swing open easily. And as you do, and the door reaches the other side, there's the clattering of, you know, echo that travels down. It's like you're about to walk down these stairs into basically like a parking garage is the feeling. There's no more like tapestries or rugs or anything. You are getting into a cold subterranean storage place down below.
What's my little star doing?
Your little star is freaking out at this point and trying to pull you down the stairs. And also, now, it has become really, really bright. Beasley and Lorenzo, I think you would notice, like, if anybody is about to, like, pass by you, there's no way Tony is successfully hiding this little star at the point. You haven't seen it, but what something in your friend's pocket is glowing with the light of a little sun.
Darling, do you think you could put that out? I think it draws a bit too much attention, you know.
You know, if I could, I would, but it was a gift, so I'm not really sure how it works.
Oh, those are the worst kinds of gifts.
Have you tried clapping it off? No.
That doesn't seem to do anything.
No. To it.
We got these really great lamps at home you wouldn't believe.
Of course.
Well, for now, it seems to be telling me that we're going in the right direction, so let's keep going down.
Okay. If anyone sees that sparkly thing, though, we're probably going to be fighting, just so you know.
Yeah, well, we can handle a little fight, I think.
You look at this beautiful older couple standing next to you in their finery, and you say that?
Yes, I do.
All right. I feel like we're learning a little bit about Tony's character here.
What my wife can do. You just wait.
You know people in this court. You're passing by bribing employees. You're sneaky as fuck. I have faith in you both.
Oh, I'm glad someone does other than my dear sweet Lorenzo. You know, it's nice.
Oh, babe. And you hear, like, these gross kissy noises coming out of his, like, fucking maw, but it's cute somehow. It's lovable.
It's like a bug giving you... Oh, boy. Folks at home, if you have not ever seen an Edder cat, I put one on the overlay. They're just a delight. Podcast listeners, go look up an Edder cat.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for this. Yes, this whole time, oh no, I'm Katie. I hate bugs. Celeste, why are you doing this? I want to play an Edercap. That's fine. This is good.
I wanted to be in the Slytherin court.
Why didn't do it? So, at the behest of your star, you continue down these long, echoing steps. And you all cannot help but notice that you are making quite a bit of noise that echoes down and around again as you're moving deeper and deeper into the base of whatever this place is. And as you land at the bottom of the stairs, you are in a very dimly lit hallway that smells. As you have gotten deeper and deeper down here, the smell of hay, of animal refuse, of just, of like cleaning products that are trying to overwhelm the smells fills your nose here. And you can also hear very eerie sounds of scuffling, of growling coming from somewhere, but they're all weird and distorted down in this strange subterranean space. And what you actually see in front of you is a hallway that does a T intersection to the left and to the right. But other than that, it's just the stone walls that you currently see.
Okay. As we get closer to the T intersection, which way does my star pull?
The star will pull you to the left.
This way. Tony turns to the left.
You take a turn, and there is a very solid-looking door in front of you all that you see has a big padlock on it.
Anyone got a key? Anyone got a key? By any chance? No, I didn't think so. Worth the try. Let's break it.
Wait, hold on. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I just want to see if my star will do anything to the door and try and just, like, place it on the padlock. I don't know why, but shit is magical and weird, and who knows, maybe it'll help me bust through this door. So she places it on the padlock.
Yeah, and I guess for the first time then, Beasley and Lorenzo, you would see what has been shining in your friend's pocket. It does look like a miniature star. And as this half-orc told you, her name is Franny, that's clearly a lie, as she's brought out this, it's a tiny star that's just floating there of its own accord in space, and it fills up this whole hallway with its silver and shiny light. It's like, it's uncomfortable to look at, and you see the star, like a little firefly, is just like hitting against the door over and over, like a bug trying to, you know, get into a lamp and not understanding that it hurts, and it's bounding off again and just smacking again and again against this door.
Where on earth did you get that?
Like I said, it was a gift. I'm not sure how I got it, but
don't worry, babe, I'll get you something sparkly like that.
Beasley and Lorenzo, why don't you go ahead and give me an arcana or a history, some kind of...
Oof. LMAO, my intelligence is 2. I'll hold off.
Oh, no. Mine's 7. But I got an 18 on the die. Okay. These birthday dice.
So only a minus 3. So...
minus 2.
16. Minus 2, yeah. So 16. So Lorenzo... That's pretty weird. I mean, this person has a star that's hanging out. And, like, I mean, this is a clear indication if somebody's just walking around with a star and she keeps saying it's a gift, that this is maybe something from the heavenly court, which is, like, a whole other ballgame compared to what you're dealing with the forest court and the Slytherin court. And she's been saying that she doesn't know anything about the courts, but, like... She has a sentinel star from the heavenly court that she just is carrying around here.
I think Lorenzo, who's been on the ceiling, just kind of falls down to the ground. He's like, hey, Franny, you fucking with me? You with this heavenly court?
I'm not with any court. No. Why? Listen, I don't know how this works. I don't know where it came from. But if I saw it in a dream and then I woke up with it.
A dream?
And now the dream, she's like, the sleeping court would occur to you if, like, the dream.
What's your game here?
The game? There is no game. Okay, I'm here to... What's your game? You're trying to help your friends. I'm trying to help something that needs my help. That's kind of all there is to it. I don't think we have much time to interrogate each other about it while we're in this dungeon holding a bright object, okay?
Listen, all I'm saying is that if you get me and my wife in trouble, we're going to be in trouble. But if you're coming and you're going to help us with this thing, then we're good.
That's all I'm here to do. Help you with your thing. I get a little help with my thing.
All right. I'm warning you, though. I'm real nice, but I can get real mean.
Consider me warned.
Oh, Lorenzo.
All right.
So my star is not really helping with the door, huh?
No, it is smashing itself like a moth against, like, an outside light at this moment. It seems to have no kind of intelligence or powers beyond being really fucking shiny.
Yeah, then Tony, like, claps at it a couple times in the air like she's trying to catch a fly. And
yeah, you get it eventually. Yeah, it wiggles in your hand. Yeah, and you have it.
Why is the star making Lorenzo hungry?
It does move a lot like that. A little.
I could go for a snack.
A really shiny
Beasley
snack.
Beasley will try and break the lock. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, go for it, Beasley. Give me what do you want to use to do this?
I'd say she's definitely trying to just definitely, like, with her claws, just, like, brute force it apart.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, nice. That is a 23.
Oh, shit. Yeah, how do you just destroy this? What is this display that you show Tony Tony sees as you just...
She just shoves two of her, like, index finger claws into the lock. And you see she just kind of, like, flexes and then just pulls it apart. And, you, like, the whole thing just goes, bing, like a bunch of springs.
Oh, well, you gotta teach me that.
Holy shit.
That did it for Lorenzo.
Oh, good. And with that, yeah, the lock is decimated and you can absolutely move forward.
Well, didn't after you.
Talking thank to you, Tony. Beasley. Yeah, who's going in the front? Yeah, Tony.
I'll go first.
Okay. So you open up this door, and the minute you do so, those sounds, those weird, echoey animal sounds you've been hearing come to head. You can tell that they are absolutely coming from this room. And that smell becomes overwhelming. The smell of animal filth, of feed, of straw. As you are looking now at this, almost looks like a stable, but you can see that there are bars covering each of these stalls. So whatever is kept in here is clearly not your gentle animals that you lead up willingly to a track, one might say. And I think you experience a very intense deja vu, Tony, as you're looking through this room, looking down the hallways, and this is something you have seen before. And just like before in that dream, you feel compelled to walk down one of these many hallways in this space. And at the very end, there's a stall that you can see on the right. And the sound of kicking, of hooves kicking furiously against a door comes to you. And Beasley, you would instantly smell something familiar to you in this place. That same, it's hard to say exactly what it is, but when a beast like you, a greater beast, ascends, they smell a little bit different. And you can smell two. Mm-hmm. Two individuals like you somewhere in this place instantly.
And you see, and she immediately like hunches over, so she's almost like this kind of big ball of fur that's like lumbering forward and against like the bottoms of the door. She's just snuffling her nose across to try and find the source of it.
Tony, what are you doing? You think down this row, probably on your right, there's a stall that you feel very compelled. Your star is pulling you there. You feel like you've seen it before. But there are many others rows here, maybe five rows in total, with about four of these iron caged stalls on each side.
Her heart is racing right now, and she wants to take a look into as many of them as she can, trying to find the thing that she saw in her dreams. And also just out of curiosity, wants to know what else is in here.
Yeah. So you race past, I think, just even the first one in front of you is what you run down and you see. Most of the cages appear to be empty, with the recent smells or signs of something that has been transported or gone. But probably simultaneously, Beasley, you would find that there are two stalls that are occupied by these smells. And at the same time, Tony, you are going to find the stall you were looking for. Beasley, as you come to the end of one of these halls, next to each other, that smell comes to a head. And you see crouched at the very back of these cells, there is one, a very miserable brown bear who's, you know, twice your size, which is saying something. And he's got, you know, the tattered remains of like a silk top hat just stuck on his ears. Has been, you know, destroyed. And he looks up from the ground with his little shattered like glasses turning towards you and says, "Oh, hello." And then right next door to this bear, you see crouched at the end, like laying on the floor, a gigantic white rabbit who turns their pink eyes up towards you.
"What is going on? Hello?"
These two voices coming to you from these beasts you Baron! Recognize.
Tilda!
Oh, I'm sorry, what are their names? Tilda and... I'm ready to...
The bear is the Baron.
Yes.
Oh my god. I love
And
you.
Then the rabbit is Tilda.
Swinton.
And they look up and they stand on shaky legs, and the Baron waddles forward on his great girth and says, "Beasley, is that you? Is this a dream?" And puts a paw up on the other side of the cage.
Yeah, she definitely lifts her little claw at it and she's like, "Don't worry, we're here. We're gonna bust you out."
And you hear,
"Me and Lorenzo and some other broad."
And you hear from the rabbit, from Tilda says, "How did you get in here? I didn't think anyone was coming. How did you know?" And like pokes a little sniffing nose out from behind the bars.
Yeah, like a very gentle little snoop boop.
Mm-hmm.
Because we got news from the court, and they sent us undercover, and you know, a few bribes here and there, and bing, bang, boom, we got Lorenzo, and we're in. I'm gonna work on the lock.
This is a terrible place. Last thing the Baron and I knew, we were a little inebriated coming back from that ball, you know, the one, and it one thing led to another, and then we woke up and we were here. They've had me eating out of a bucket. A bucket!
That's awful.
I know!
Tilda cries against the bars of this place.
Yeah, looking at it, like, she's trying to look to see if she can, like, brute force something open. Yeah.
Yeah, so you start investigating what's...
She's calling Lorenzo over.
Yeah, absolutely. So you and Lorenzo are looking at these cages, and Tony, compelled by both this star and things you have seen, you walk to the end of this row in front of you. And you see that there is an extra level of like boards and bars and security that has been placed over this stall, more than you saw in your dream before. And through now, basically like the prisoner's jail slot that is left of this stable, you see a shining green eye of a horse that has pressed its face against this window and is staring at you. As you have approached, it has gone very quiet, but it is leaning now against this door. You can see, you know, its great, the jade-colored skin once again, and the press of its mane, which was this amalgamation of leaves and, like, jasmine flowers that you can now see. And the great beast is breathing heavily. Just, you can even see just from the pain of its face that is pressed against the door as you approach.
Tony is, like, in like slow motion, puts her whole body, hands up against that door, and is like in awe of it for a moment. Oh my god, you're real. And then starts to like inspect the door. Where are the openings? Where are the locks? Where are the hinges? All of that. How can I make my way through this?
Yeah. I mean, as you're looking at it, you can see that there are a couple different padlocks on the door. It looks like this one in particular has been like reinforced with iron bars over it. So this creature has apparently been a problem compared to the others. But as you're standing there and you are standing against the door, I think there's definitely that moment where you both feel each other. And it's hard to explain exactly what that is, but the presence of this thing and the presence of you, there's a connection that happens, and the creature backs away from the door and is looking at you the whole time you're searching this lock, this door. And as it does back away, you can see that set in the center of its forehead is a spiraling horn.
I'm going to take out the star one more time and see if it'll do anything now that I'm finally in front of this thing.
Yeah, and as you do, you take out the star, it starts to flicker. Like its light is finally expend, and then kind of fades, and it dulls, and disappears, like silver dust, just like it did in your dream, when it reached your heart.
I'm gonna try to step back and also just like make eye contact with it, try and, I don't know, see if it does any other physical indication of if it's managed to get out of here before and it needed all this extra security, I'm going to try to just like in my mind think, how can I get you out of here? Show me where to look. Mm-hmm. And just try and mind read it for a second.
Yeah, you're standing there trying to like look at it and think at it, and you can see, I mean, the creature behind this door, this horse that is so much more than a horse, is looking at you, and it's clearly reacting to your emotions. So, I mean, you've probably had experiences with very smart horses, but this goes beyond that. It is watching you and considering what you're doing. It doesn't quite seem to have that connection to understand what's happening, but it is watching you very carefully. Beasley, why don't you go ahead and make me a check to see how you're doing with these locks. So unlike this stall, you're just dealing with a couple normal padlocks and some chains holding both of these cells. So
nice. Oh, yeah.
I would love to help my
breaking
wife
some chains.
If I could.
Yeah. Yeah, roll with advantage as Lorenzo is helping with his spider fingies.
It's not that, it's my love. It encourages her.
It fortifies me. That is a 22.
Holy shit.
Yeah, so, yeah, it does.
She's grinding. Shoving her whole body against this door.
So, question for you. Who did you start with? Tilda, the giant white rabbit, or the Baron, the giant brown bear?
I think she would go for the Baron, because as weak as he might be now, having two bodies will make, hopefully, getting the second one open faster.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so you are making very short work of this lock, and I think, Tony, as you are starting to fiddle with the chains on the door here, and Beasley, you have just broken through the Baron's lock. There is a slam that happens at the front of this room, and immediately the sound of barking greets all of your ears as you see another of these very tall, hooded individuals step into the room and calls out, "What are you doing here? No one is supposed to be back here," calls out to the three of you.
Ooh, we're performance. We were told to get these ones ready for the next show, the next round.
Okay, roll me a deception check with disadvantage as you are fondling the chains of this stable.
Oh, no.
Oh, damn it. I rolled a nat 20 and then I rolled a 10.
Ah, isn't that the way?
Neat. Yep, okay. And you hear a, "Interlopers, you shall die." Let's roll some initiative, just real quick. Yeah, you know.
Woo!
Oh no, Lorenzo. God.
Yeah,
oh,
me
no,
too.
Lorenzo.
I rolled a natural
me
one.
Me too.
Oh my god, you guys.
I got a 12.
Okay, well, add your stuff. Add your stuff.
One.
I added my
three.
Stuff. Three. I got a 12.
Oh my god, you guys. You're gonna die. Maybe. Okay.
What did I say? We had bad omens tonight. What did I say?
The tech gods and the fey gods want none of this. Damn. All right. So, Tony, you got a 3. Beasley is a 1. Lorenzo is a 12.
Mm-hmm.
Nah, Beasley's a 10.
Oh, you. Okay. Well, then, this darkling elder who has stepped into the room here will extend a hand forward, and again you hear that barking sound as if dogs are surrounding him, but you do not see any dogs, which is alarming in of itself. And he takes out a longbow from his back and is going to fire it at you, Tony, since you are right here down the middle of the line. Oh shit, this might be good. Okay. Well, only a 10 to hit you. So the first shot flies past you and misses you. I think you have enough opportunity at least to duck from this attack. But he's going to do it again, because why not? And then a 12. Ooh, okay, this dice is working well for you. So two shots rapidly fire off, but this big introduction and the big speech gave you just enough time to duck as this is all happening very quickly. And then Lorenzo, you are actually the next one to act.
Woo! All right. How far away is he and how high are the ceilings are my questions.
The ceilings are probably only about 15 feet. You're subterranean, so not super duper high. And I'll say you can easily be within 30 feet of wherever because it's all pretty compacted in here.
As a bonus action, I'm going to use my fey court for the slithering court.
Tell us what that is because this is a fun preview. Yay.
If it works. All right. So my feature for the temple that I applied to the Adder Cap, I get disturbing aspect because I was once part of the Slithering Court. So what that means is as a bonus action, the serf, me, can target one creature within 30 feet that can see it. The target must succeed on a DC 13 charisma saving throw or become frightened of the serf for 1 minute. A creature can repeat the saving throw at the end of each of its turns, ending the effect on itself on a success. If the creature's saving throw is successful or the effect ends, the creature is immune for the next 24 hours.
I am also a Feifei, so I do get a plus 6. So let's see. Only an 11. Oh my god. Okay.
I'm terrifying.
I am frightened of you, so I cannot move closer to you. Let me just go ahead and look that up. I always forget what the frightened, yeah.
Can't move closer, and while the source of that sphere is within line of sight, you have disadvantage on attack rolls.
Boo! I'm sorry, what is your frightening aspect? What does Lorenzo do to their face? their slithering court, what's their vibe that they give off?
Yeah,
it's so scary.
I think that Lorenzo, who had been like just turning away from his wife for a second, suddenly his mouth opens up and it just starts to ooze. And in that moment, he's gonna take his movement to just kind of skitter across the floor towards him and go in for a bite.
Skittering! Yes, good. Great. Yes.
Get him, Lorenzo!
Do I have advantage when he's frightened or no? As he just has disadvantage. Okay.
No.
I shit you not, that's a natural 20.
Whoa! Okay. Holy shit! Beep, beep,
beep. Holy shit. Okay. So 24 to hit, so that means I get 2d8 plus 2. So that's 6, 8 piercing damage plus 2d8 of poison damage.
Oh boy, it's so nice playing creature step.
Man.
So that's going to be 11 points of poison damage, and he has to make a DC 11 constitution saving throw or be poisoned for 1 minute.
Oh, God. All right, that's fine.
Definitely put on the battle fedora.
Oh, yeah. I'm telling ya. It wasn't the face that was scary. He noticed the fedora.
So I got a 15 on the con save.
Okay.
So right, not poisoned.
And he is not poisoned. Yep.
Ugh, but still took a fuck lot of damage. Neat. That's fine. That's good. It is at this moment that... Ooh, hang on. Did I close that? I closed my other stat block like a fool. That's okay. I linked it. It is at this moment that all of a sudden, Beasley, something you did not recognize, unless you have something against being surprised.
No, I do not.
The ephemera, the dim light in this room, coalesces all of a sudden into the face of a stout hunting dog before you as shadow forms together and bites out at you as this shadow creation reaches out and bites into your flesh. Will a 12 hit you?
That hits exactly.
Okay. Then you are going to take 12 piercing damage as this thing bites into you, and I need you to make a strength saving throw.
Ooh, baby.
Yeah, that's so fucking great for you. I'm a giant badger. Fuck off.
That is a 16.
Okay, yeah, so you are not dragged to the ground as this dog is trying to, like, drag you down. But another one materializes out of the shadows next to you, Tony, and is going to try and hit you. 17 to hit?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yep. And that is Well, only 8 piercing damage as this thing bites into your leg and is starting to tear again at the recent injury you just had, and it's trying to fuck with it, and it's just really ruining your day. Make me a strength saving throw.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
12?
12 is not enough. So this thing tears at your leg in just the wrong way, and you are knocked prone as you fall to the ground. And this thing stands atop you and keeps goring at you. Tony, it comes to you. You are prone, so you can stand up. That would be half of your movement to do so. But it wouldn't invoke an attack of opportunity or anything.
Okay. Well, yes, I would definitely like to stand up and just see if swinging my sword at this thing would, you know, contact and hit, do any kind of damage.
Yeah, go ahead and roll the hit.
Oh, no. Nope. No, it was a 5. Why did I bother even reading? It was a 5.
Your blade, it's just a normal blade, right? It's not magical?
Yeah.
You see your blade travel through this thing as if you were cutting through smoke.
Fuck.
It does nothing to this creature. Anything else for you? You probably have a second attack, right? Well, level 2 fighter? No, maybe not.
Yeah, no, but I can action surge.
Yeah.
But... well, I get my whole new movement again. I'm going to try and... I would incur an attack of opportunity if I run.
I will say, if you hit, you might deal some damage, but not as much as you would like, because your blade is not magical.
Okay. Well, we'll just try it one more time then.
Action surge.
Get out of here, bud. Oh, okay. That's a 12 to hit.
A 12? Is exactly what you need to hit. So you do make a little bit of contact with this thing as you're dragging through. So go ahead and roll that damage.
6 damage, slashing damage.
So that becomes reduced to 3. So you're going to be doing about only half damage to one of these things, since your blade is not magical. But you do see some of that shadow matter forming this body splatter against the ground. And as your turn comes to an end, the door right beside you starts like booming outwards as the hooves of this creature just on the other side start striking it, and you hear its whole body throwing against like chains. You hear the creaking and the crumbling of this structure as this thing is trying to get out to help you. And that is going to bring us to Beasley.
And yeah, as this dog has just appeared from nowhere and has gone after her. she just whirls around with this quickness and she immediately lunges in to bite at it herself.
Hell yeah.
Ooh, that is a 21.
Oh, damn. Yes.
And that is 6 damage. And then she's just going to then just reach her long badger arms and rake with her claws.
Stop.
And that is a 13.
Okay, a 13 will also hit.
Wow. And 7 more damage.
Okay. So yeah, you are tearing into this thing, and your claws aren't doing quite as much as you would like, but you are clearly a threat. This is like a medium-sized normal dog that you are going after. And as you are like charging after it, this dog has no idea what is going on. And just as you finish your turn too, bursting out of the newly freed like cell, you see this gigantic bear now stands up to its full height as the Baron is now into his own, standing about 14 feet tall, and comes down like on top of this hound. And just with like a yelp and a burst of darkness, this thing barely maintains its shape as both your claws and a giant bear's are raking at it. Like, it is facing down now these two predators in a hall, and you see its hackles go as it's making whining sounds and backing up towards this darkling. So it's not quite dead, but you all have cowed the heck out of it. Which brings us back up to the Master of Hounds, who is afeared, but he's going to do something tricky. You see, he whistles. He makes like a sharp whistling sound and points at the Baron. And Beasley, you see directly next to you, the Baron, all of a sudden, who's standing up full height, so intimidating, his eyes change to just like a dominated, glassy stare.
Oh, no.
And the Baron makes a like a very animal bear sound and just kind of looks at you with just a complete lack of intelligence as this happens. Like he's almost like he's a lesser beast again.
She shrieks in a shriek that just echoes throughout this hallway.
Yeah, because I think the implications of that suck. That sucks. And you realize that as Lorenzo, you hear your wife scream out. You're not really sure why, but this happens, and we move to you.
Yeah, I think that he turns his head for a moment and looks back and sees her. And when he turns back to this man, all eight eyes are just glowing in the slight darkness of this room. And he's like, "You fuck with the wrong man's wife." He's gonna go in and go for this guy's fucking throat.
I love Lorenzo. Chat has demanded that we have a spin-off series about Beasley and Lorenzo. I have a feeling, chat, that this is not the last time you will see Beasley and Lorenzo in this campaign. So
I'm having a great time. All right, so that is 18 plus 4, 22.
To hit, yes.
Thank
yes.
you, Joe, for my birthday dice, because today...
Oh my god, they're murdering. Yes, let's do it.
All right, so that's going to be 7 plus 2, 9 piercing damage plus
damn, yes.
4 poison damage. And then as his little maw, oh, he can make a poison saving throw. Or wait, does he have to make that again? Yeah, he has to make that again. Constitution saving throw, DC 11.
Spiders, speedris. That's a fail. That's an absolute failure.
Yeah, and he just feels as that
I can do nothing.
Just pumps down this guy's veins from where he's been bitten in the throat.
Yes,
and in that moment, he's just gonna wrap his long arms around him and with his multi-attack, do a claw around his back.
Yeah, nice.
Okay, well, that's not as good.
It's okay. He's not looking good. So
a 12 to hit.
A 12 will still hit.
Oh, okay. Then that's going to be 2d4. Oh, that's 2 ones plus 2. So 4 points of slashing damage.
Yeah, so like a spider, you have landed on top of this dude and you are just going, stabbing and biting, and he is shrieking. Oh boy.
Don't fuck with my wife. We wouldn't be here.
Yep. So we come to the beast, this shadow dog, that is squaring off now with you, Beasley, and the Baron, who all of a sudden doesn't seem to be very much on your side, as another whistle comes through. So with reinvigorated energy, this dog is going to try and bite into you again. Only a 9, though. So I don't think it quite got over its fear of what happened to it. So it makes a limp attempt to try and hit you, but it fails. And then by you, Tony, this creature seems to still be doing well. So it is going to jump up, get you a 16. Will that hit you?
Oh, yeah, it just does.
Okay, so it bites in between the plates of your armor and starts tearing, you know, its head from side to side in the way like hunting dogs do. That's going to be 8 points of damage as it rips again at you.
Well, she goes down.
Oh. No! Unconscious?
Yeah, I only had 12 hit points.
Yes, okay.
12? Oh.
Yes, so you go down, and you obviously fall prone as this is happening, and the world fades to black for you. And that is going to move us now. Tony, go ahead and make me a death saving throw.
Well, I do have endurance, so When my hit point goes down to zero, I can change it to a one once per.
So that is what you would have done in that moment. You are still up at one hit point, but you would have needed to make me a strength saving throw. So that automatically happens for you, half orc.
Okay.
So like your body would have been ripped to shreds, but something in you is like, nope, I'm not going to fucking give up today. So make me a strength saving throw. See if this dog knocks you down.
It was a 23.
Oh, shit. Yeah, so you, in that moment, I think, stagger back. The world, it's almost like if you've ever just been on the verge of fainting and, the blackness rolls in and the world is spotting in color, but you manage to stay on your feet here as we come to your turn. So you have one hit point on your turn. What are you doing with it? You have a turn back. It's huge.
I gotta try and get this thing off my fucking ass, so I wanna go over there and help Beasley. I'm gonna try and hit it.
Okay, go for it.
15?
A 15 will hit.
With 5 damage, so what is that, 2?
Yes. So you, chunk into this thing, and you are dealing damage to it. Slow but steady. You can see pieces of it starting to, blast off with your blade here, but it is still very sharply squaring you down. And then Tony, you hear something, I think the blood rushing through your ears, consciousness barely there. You hear the shattering of wood and metal somewhere vaguely on your left. And you see a glint of green and gold, and this creature, this horse, has broken out of their stable. And as they bring their head down, you see the horn on their head glows with that green light and makes contact with the shadow thing in front of you and is obliterated. Again, like the sparkles and the gold that you've been seeing so many times, stars, that celestial feeling, it is gone. And this beast, now that you can see for the first time in full as your vision is going in and out, it is standing there above you, and it looks down, and you can see the horn from its head still shimmering with light. And you see that on its back, folded against its body, like compressed and sad, as if it's been kept for quite some time, are a pair of wings that have been folded and compressed and...
A Pegacorn?
Oh my god.
And for the first time you see like those feathers are starting to flicker and like loosely try and get some exercise as it expands in this space that is just too small for it.
This is Tony's face, hands just at her chin, like in awe, jaw dropped.
Oh, so you're like, god. My brain is melting. I'm so hurt.
You're beautiful. Your glory.
And it smells like summer. Fresh cut grass and those late summer blooms. And I think that's what overwhelms you probably the most as you're looking at this jade creature in front of you, adorned with flowers. Beasley, we come to you. It is your turn, my dear. You have something in front of you here. You know that the Baron is acting next. And has that expression on his face that doesn't seem too great.
Mm-hmm. She is going to... Oh, this is tragic. She is going to... She really wants to get through... the Darkling guy's... He was obliterated, right? By the unicorn?
No. That was just the shadow dog thing that was biting into it. Tony. The Darkling is still there at the door. Lorenzo is currently on him, biting a lot. And you have a big shadow dog in front of you.
Yeah, she definitely wants to barrel for it. Because she wants to get to that Darkling guy so badly. Yeah. And she wants to tear him apart for what he did to the Baron. And so with her... She's going to run for it. And basically just try and with her... Like, just try and shove the dog back towards the Baron. And then keep barreling through to get to the Darkling.
Hell yeah, let's do it. So grapple...
Yeah.
Pushy.
Nice. That's a 15.
It's a 13 for me. So you push this little shadow dog, just hurl it across the room with your gigantic badger strength. And it, you hear, ooh, and like a burst into shadow as this thing kind of disappears from existence for a moment.
And then she's going to just run forward with her just teeth first, just go and try and latch onto this guy's neck. Ooh, nice. That is a 24.
Oh, yeah.
And she does 10 damage.
Yeah. Fuck. Yeah, you deal a huge amount of damage to this thing that already Lorenzo is attached to. So you come in and, like, down lower, and just this black blood from this thing is trailing out onto the floor at this point. And from behind you, Beasley, you hear a lumbering, scraping sound as a great bear is charging towards you from behind. And I think you have just enough time to swing your head around and see the Baron standing up above you, about to stand down with his great weight, when all of a sudden he stops and the cloudiness stops. And Lorenzo, something like a weird twitch comes from the Starkling below you, and the Darkling falls. And just behind, you see another Darkling, a smaller one, a familiar face, Lorenzo, that's just driven a knife into the back of this individual and looks up and he says,
ah, sorry it took me so long to get here. It's so good to see you, cousin. Oh my god, you've caused so much trouble. You need to get the hell out of here.
Hey, Vinny, what you doing to me? Why are you so late?
Oh, come here.
And, like, reaches up his little hands to your face to bring it down. Come here.
It's so good to see you. I'm so sorry. I had to go and get some popcorn, and then it was all out of the popcorn, and then it was a whole thing.
Hey, what can you do? Sometimes the popcorn's out.
Yeah, I didn't know
out,
you were going to be here even before the race is starting. It's just the first round, so, you know, before anybody notices, you got to get the hell out of here.
Sure. Okay. Hey, you mind if we take some of the rest of these guys out, or, you know, is that gonna be bad news for you?
Hey man, I mean, I had nothing to do with it. You came in here, you stabbed a guy. I just found it, you know what I mean? Yeah, he's like, but you gotta
let's
go
get
soon.
Tilda.
You gotta go soon. Yeah, and you go back and you can, like, definitely, you know, break Tilda out.
And yeah, Tony, what is going on with you now as this creature is now standing there, its wings trying to unfold in the space? Looking at you.
She's kind of just been, like, staring at it for a minute or two, and then, like, slowly brings a hand up to see if it would, you know, bring its little snout, or, I mean, big snout, over to her hand.
It's like a stallion, so it's quite large. And there is a moment where it rears, it pulls its head back, like it doesn't know what you're doing. A symbol you've seen in creatures that have been mistreated and doesn't really trust.
Mm-hmm. She'll take a step back first, wait till it's ready to come forward.
Yeah, and you do, and there's a long, I think, you know, minute where you both stand across from each other and look at each other with intention, and then the great beast lowers its head, kind of walks forward, and butts its very soft nose into your shoulder.
The second it does, she kind of melts and is like, my god, and wants to gently rub a hand down its nose, slowly, very softly, and say to it, I saw you in my dreams, and I had to come for you.
And its skin feels the same way if you're brushing like a sage plant, the little soft hairs covering its green skin. And it closes its eyes and kind of rests its head on your shoulder. And as the horn on its head makes contact with you, you feel a warmth and a light that fills you as it restores 20 hit points to you.
Hot damn!
You feel it, your body knit itself back together as this creature's power washes over you. And it, again, it steps back a little bit and it looks at you. And again, with its very intelligent eyes, kind of nods.
Nodding again. You'll be okay now. let's get everyone out. And turning around to see, catching up on what the hell's been happening with everyone else.
Yeah, you see a gigantic bear is now standing very confused about what just happened for the last, 6 seconds. It was all a complete blur.
The Baron is back?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The minute this creature went down, he seemed to be restored. But whatever this thing was, whatever this Darkling did, it seemed to have a lot of power over beasts, even beasts like you, Beasley, which is alarming that the Slytherin court could do anything like that. That's new.
That's deep dark magic.
That is not good. That is not good. And now you have gotten, Tilda out of the cell, and she is just fussing, of course, over the Baron and everything. And Vinny is just saying,
This is really nice, but like seriously, you got it, like buddy.
He's looking at you, Lorenzo. Like,
okay. Everybody, grab the keys. We'll report back. And he just kind of looks around and he's like, "All right, I'm letting these fuckers out on the way out, but we gotta roll, fam. Niece, wife, Baron." Tilda, let's bounce. Get it, grab it.
Yeah. And you all, shoving out of the doors as Vinny is like ushering you all up the stairs. Huge procession, making a ton of noise. But luckily, from up above, you start to hear like cheering sounds and hoofbeats like of a race is now at least going on, distracting some attention from what's happening. So you all manage to make your way outside somehow without attracting too much attention. Vinny is like, "I gotta play defense," running back, like distracting people as you all step out into the night. So Lorenzo and Beasley, you're standing here now with a giant bear, a huge alicorn thing that's like bright green and, smells like jasmine covered in everything, and this giant white rabbit. So
it's the Tuesday. We're in the Feywild. Just kidding.
Yeah. Standing in the worst part of town in the midnight quarter, so.
Well, Franny, it's been a pleasure. You sure did hit that shadow dog. And, looks like you made a big old friend. I still think you're working for the Heavenly Court, but, we can work past that because you're pretty cool.
I think I made more than one friend.
Oh, stay out of trouble, dear. If you ever need us again, you'll find us around. Our house is just right around the corner.
Oh, you gotta come for pot roast. She makes the best potato pot roast.
Oh, yes.
I'm glad I know some folks in Coven. Thank you so much. And thank you for helping me. And I wish I could have done more for you, but I'm glad you found your friends.
Yeah. You'll get stronger, I can tell. Look at you. That sword. Get out of here.
I'm certainly trying. Take care, you two. Love, birds.
And yeah, absolutely. As Tilda and the Baron start to wander off after this Capul, the horse beside you, this beautiful winged creature, you can see their wings are still crumpled and sad from disuse, and they don't look like they're in any shape to fly, and kind of take it. Couple hoofbeats, following after everyone, and then they look back at you.
Well, we got to somehow make our way out of this town discreetly, I think. I'm gonna drape my, I know it's not gonna help much, but I'm gonna drape my cloak over its back, try and disguise its wings and mane as much as possible. And then with my, no, I don't want to wrap anything around its mouth.
Yeah, I think as you do that, you throw the cloak about it. It pauses for a moment and shakes its wings, and your cloak falls to the ground, and it looks at you, and it looks sad, and it walks towards you again, and kind of it pushes its forehead against yours, if you'll accept it.
She'll push her forehead back against its.
And you're not sure how you know this, because the beast doesn't speak. It doesn't have any kind of telepathy or anything, but something in you is so connected to this creature. And you just know that as it is doing this, it is saying, Now is not the time, but we will meet again.
Oh, no. Okay. She's very sad. She's very happy that it's out. It's like very bittersweet. Picks up her cape off the ground, puts it back on herself, and just kind of nods at the creature and steps back and says, I'll be waiting for you.
And it nods its great green head, walks off into the night. Beasley and Lorenzo, the Baron and Tilda, they are going to find Forest Court friends who will assuredly be able to get them out of Coven. And that is where we're going to end for the evening. Congratulations, Tony. You have officially achieved tier one of your heroic destiny, which is the symbiosis feature. For those of you who are not in the know, heroic destinies are a new mechanic that we presented in the Venture Maidens campaign guide. Essentially, these are almost like subplots that each character pursues as they become what they want to be personally. So Tony has decided to pursue the symbiosis destiny, which is basically when you forge a bond, like a deep bond with a creature type different than yourself. So now, you're also going to level after this, Tony. So it's a very exciting time for you. So things that you gain now that you have achieved tier one and you've hit, for example, there are a ton of different milestones or ways you could achieve these heroic destinies. But for one example, it's like freeing or helping a creature that would form the deeper bond is certainly one of them. So now you have, let's see. Tier 1 features of the Symbiosis Heroic Destiny, you gain the benefit of understanding. So you understand how to communicate with your bonded creature, regardless of language. If your bonded creature speaks a language, you learn how to speak, read, and write that language. If your bonded creature does not speak a language, which they do not, you gain the ability to understand it and communicate it with it in a way that is most comfortable. So you have like the psychic connection to this creature.
Amazing!
Yes. And then the second benefit you get is camaraderie. So your connection gives you a deep understanding of how best to work with creatures of your selected type, all creatures of your chosen species that would regard you as neutral, instead regard you as friendly. So from this point on, your companion, this creature that you help save, is a celestial creature. So whenever you are dealing with celestial creatures, anything that would be neutral towards you actually feels friendly towards you because they sense that you have helped and been a friend.
So I got friends in high places?
You really do. Literally. So those are your tier one features of your symbiosis destiny. So tier two awaits whenever you achieve that next milestone to deepen your relationship.
Yay! Fun! I love that.
Hell yeah, dude. And of course, you're going to be level three, so that's super great, super fun. So next time the gang all gets back together, we're all going to be level three.
Strong.
Can't wait.
We're growing girls. Nice.
Yes. I hope you all deeply enjoyed Lorenzo and Beasley as much as I did. Delight, these two. We do need a spinoff. We do need a spinoff series. Absolutely.
This is the only time you'll ever hear me do a shitty accent.
No, it's great. It's fantastic. You're a giant spidray. It's all good. Damn kids. Thank you all so much for the great episode. Let's do it. Let's close it out. Hey, everybody. My name is Celeste Konowich, and I have been your dungeon master.
Hello. My name is Katie, and I've been playing Lorenzo, the Ettercap husband.
And I am Nassim, and I was your half-orc fighter, Fetonia Silvertail, with a new celestial best friend.
And I am Sage, and I have been your beastly barbarian badger.
You beautiful, beautiful humans. Well, we have run over time, so I'm just going to say thank you all so much for being here, for enjoying the show. If you loved this, please do consider checking out, you know, Venture Maidens is available as a podcast. Consider subscribing to the Patreon. We have a bunch of great rewards. You know, subscribe to us on social media everywhere. And of course, before we really, really sign off, we have to say thank you so much to the Patreon donors who have brought us here to this point. Now, if you sign up at the $25 or higher level on our Patreon tier, we say thank you to you at the end of these episodes. So let's go around the table here. And I want to say thank you so much to our Arnie's cohorts, starting with Cody Becker at Cody Rolls 4 on Twitter.
Thank you to Debbie.
A thank you, Curry.
Thank you, Muffin, at the one on Drury Lane on Twitter, because of course.
And thank you so much to Nisa McKinnon.
Richie113 on our Discord.
And then in our Farrah's Drinking Mate tier, thank you, Chris.
Hell yeah. All right. Well, that's the good business. And thank you all for sticking around. And until next time, everybody.
Venture away!
You cool cats. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.